Happy Thanksgiving weekend to everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of TigerCast. My name is Craig Saxon, and on today's show, we will have our annual season-ending discussion with Bob Cerace. We had this every year on TigerCast, moving it to the new Original 11 podcast. It's been a lot of fun having this podcast this season. Looking forward to, you know, doing a few of these during the off-season, kind of charting this team's progression moving into 2018. A lot to talk about, a lot to be excited about, and certainly we will do so over the next 7-8 months. But still a lot to reflect on for this past season. Some historic accomplishments, some obviously tough near misses, you know, progression for some players that are going to be, you know, have big roles next year. Certainly a lot to talk about, and as always, Bob Cerace was very generous with his time, you know, between player meetings and, you know, getting ready for recruiting and celebrating Thanksgiving, you know, with his family, who, you know, he sees so very little of over the last 3 months. It was great to catch up with him, and, you know, besides the football knowledge that he imparts and the thoughts and you know, everything he shared, he even dropped an Eminem lyric, which, frankly, I wasn't expecting, and I enjoyed immensely. So here's my season-ending conversation with Bob Cerace.
Bob, there will be plenty of time to, you know, look ahead and talk about 2018. And we'll touch on that a little bit here in this. But there's plenty to reflect on right now about this season, kind of on all sides. Let's start on the defensive side, since obviously there were the most issues at the end of the season. And I want to go back, you know, middle of the year, shut out at Brown. You know, you give up 17 points against Harvard, and seven of them are when the game is well in hand. And even then, you had already had the strain, the Fasadi, and the Wagner injuries. But at that point, did this defense resemble what you thought it could be?
Yeah, you know, I thought we were playing okay to well early in the year, and we had our moments, you know, where we weren't as good in coverage or in pass rush as we'd like. There were moments where we could have been better stopping the run, but overall we were playing solid football. And, you know, I come from a background, my dad coached football and baseball, and, you know, you need an ace. And Haluba, you know, obviously is one of the best, if not the best player in the conference. But Haluba, Hampson, Fasadi were surefire. You know, Wagner's leading the country in sacks when he went down. That's an ace, you know, and Fasadi was playing at an unbelievable level at linebacker. But you also need guys, and we needed one of those guys to stay healthy. And you need guys that eat innings and are just solid rotation guys. And we lost our, you know, when you lose 3, 4, 5 starters, we needed two of, you know, the Hampson, Strain, Rollator, Percival, you know, had such a great role in what he was doing. We need two of that group, you know, to be ready and healthy, because they give you 45 tremendously solid snaps. And when you lose an ace and you lose a couple innings eaters that are just solid rock, and every championship team has them, you know, that made it really difficult. And you go into week 7 and you're leading the nation and defending the run, and then you average giving up over 300 yards of rush the last 4 games. That's a tough pill to swallow.
Let's preface this question with the fact that there are guys on this team that are eligible to come back next year, and we're not allowed to talk about that, and so we'll let it play out.
There's nothing to see here.
Right. Let it play out. But Kurt Haluba is somebody with NFL potential. What did you see of him? Because at that position, and as much as he was double-teamed, you know, the numbers, they don't always tell the full story. You know, in some cases, Chad's, they do. But what did you see on film from Haluba over the first 5.5 weeks?
Yeah, you know, when every once in a while, you know, Aaron Rodgers, I heard on the radio the other day, he should be the MVP of the National Football League. because Green Bay can't get a first down without him.
Right.
And with them, they're a Super Bowl contender. You know, we were giving up 60, literally in 5.5 games, 61 yards a game rushing. And it's not just him. It's a group unit, everything else. But when he went down, we were still holding the fort when he was still in there to 300 yards a game. And there were terrific teams. It wasn't just like we were playing on, you know, we were playing really good teams. But I can tell you when Kurt Hlub was in there, teams aren't rushing the ball like that. And, you know, he just improved as a run stopper. His effort's tremendous. His ability to rush the passer. You know, we were doing some all-league stuff on Monday, and, you know, he's still listed in statistically up there as one of the best in the league in terms of sacks. And, you know, he gave you, you know, everything you needed. And in addition to that, his presence on the field, his leadership on the field, when you got a guy flying around the field like that at that level, and you got, you know, obviously Fassadi earlier in the year, but Tommy Johnson, who flew around the field at the second level, and Ben Ellis doing it, and T.J. Floyd started, and Chase Williams started to join Ben in the fray. We had some guys in their efforts, in their hustle, and everything else. It was really difficult to, you know, those weeks, you know, 4, 5, 6, for teams to make big plays on us.
You mentioned him, so let's talk about Tom Johnson. He's first-team All-Ivy League linebacker. You know, he was the guy that you know, you move into that position right next to Fassadi. You think that Fassadi is kind of like the leader of the defense, especially at that position group. And when he goes down, you know, Johnson had played well the first 3 weeks, but it looked like he took it upon himself to take the mantle of that leadership role. And it was just brilliant. You know, 2 16-tackle games over the last 4 weeks, you know, first-team All-Ivy League. What was his biggest growth in the season? And then, you know, what's the next step for him to be, you know, what looks like could be one of the most dominant players in the league next year?
Yeah, no, he was an outside backer, you know, his first couple years, played as a freshman some, was great on special teams, started a lot last year. And then, you know, as we went into this year and Quincy Wolf making a huge jump, we felt that we could put Tommy at inside linebacker and pair him with Fassadi. And, you know, 4-3, 3-4, you know, their numbers, they both were playing at such a high level. And, you know, when Mark was truly doing such a great leadership role, when he went down, Tommy really took it upon himself. And the way he played, and, you know, we had a guy, number 34, that was here just a few years ago, and I loved how that guy worked. I loved from the day I saw him at camp.
Zuli, you're talking
Mike
about.
Zuli. Right. Yeah, Mike Zuli, who was number 34. Tommy Johnson was the closest thing to that when we had him at camp. And, you know, he's really filling his shoes in a way that makes Mike proud, because his effort, his energy, his willingness to recklessly throw his body in to make a tackle, to make a sack, a tackle for loss, his passion, his speeches before the game, these are all things that made Mike Zuli one of the all-time greats. And, you know, Fassadi, you know, I gave him 43 because the last undersized, you know, hardworking, nobody knew how good he was going to be, linebacker from New Jersey that was maybe the best defensive player we've had, at least since I've been following Princeton football, was Dave Patterson. And, you know, we get something that's 80% of Dave Patterson and Mike Zuli, backed up by John Orr and Jack Simcox. That's pretty doggone good at the inside linebacker spots.
A lot of the talk defensively before the season was at, you know, that cornerback position and defensive backfield as well. And, you know, you have T.J. Floyd and Ben Ellis, who I thought, you know, especially Ellis had a terrific season, kind of first time in there as much as he was. Floyd did that nickel position, but those corners, C.J. Wall, Trevor Forbes playing nickel, DeLon Stallworth, we saw more in the second half of the season. Sultan Shabazz has gotten games. Matt Winston, who's somebody I know you liked coming into the preseason, has the injury early and kind of stunts his growth, and he's just a little bit behind the rest of the guys. But, you know, they all made their mistakes, which freshman cornerbacks do. But were you happy with their growth from preseason camp? And does it look like a group where maybe there is one or two guys who could be the 2016 James Gales, who all came in and really changed the face of that defense because quarterbacks just stopped throwing at them?
Yeah, I love how that how that group is working. I think that, you know, the areas we got to improve are communication. You know, I just met with every guy on the team, and you know, when it comes to we have a veteran group now. We had 20 DBs that came to training camp, and 18 of them returned. And so many of them got on-field action as DBs. So many of them got on-field action on special teams that they're going to have this the opportunity in spring ball to have to cover Steve Carlson and Tiger and Argue and Parkinson and, you know, Horsted will be hitting baseballs. But, you know, and Graham Adamitis, they're going to see a tremendous, tremendous, tremendous group of wide receivers. And we're going to know, we're going to be able to evaluate guys better than we ever have, because if you cover Steven Carlson, you're covering an NFL wide receiver. You cover Tiger Best, you're covering a guy that just had a tremendous year in the slot. Obviously, Graham came on. Argue was really good. We're going to get Parkinson back to, he was having a great camp and suffered an injury, and get him back to playing faster. And, you know, I think it's really going to allow us to see the DeLon and CJ and, you know, TC Schneider, and see these guys, Will Johnson, just Phil Frost, see how they come out of it. And, you know, obviously the guys you mentioned.
Move to the other side, and you know, it's the performance of the offense as a whole, you know, was astounding. You know, the numbers kind of tell the whole story. You know, I know in the preseason you threw the Tom Brady comparison out there to Kanoff, and then he goes out and throws, completes 73% of his passes and breaks a Jeff Matthews record, which is, you know, a little bit of hallowed ground here in the Ivy League. At some point, when did you realize that you've got something really special going on right now with Kanoff?
We knew there was a special talent when Carson Palmer came to the Bengals, and I was standing next to Jim Anderson, and Jim Anderson's one of the all-time great NFL assistant coaches. And we were in a rookie minicamp, and he threw a pass, and Jim turned to me and goes, "That guy's going to the Hall of Fame." We're really lucky. And when Chad came to training camp his freshman year, we knew it was a special talent. But you never know how a guy's going to work, how a guy's going to care, how a guy's going to develop, how a guy's going to lead and do all those things. And I really thought, and you're walking with us, and I've said this when we were lost to Lehigh the year before, and he didn't have his best game. And it wasn't all him, but at the end of the day, he always takes responsibility. You know, the head coach and the quarterback have to take responsibility no matter what. And we were walking through, and we discussed, you know, this press conference. And Chad turned to me and was like, "This will never happen again." And he had a look that, you know, that it was just different. And for the next 18 games of his career, it never happened again, you know, the way he played. And, you know, I go back, you know, you've heard of Marshall Mathers, right?
Yeah.
Eminem. And you ever hear of a song, "Till I Collapse"?
Yes.
And at one point he says, you know, there's Reggie, Jay-Z, Tupac, and Biggie, Andre from Outkast, Jada Corrupt, Nas, and then me. I'm like, I'm going through them. There's Perry, Matthews. I'm doing by alphabetical order by
right.
The schools, not by the order. But, you know, when you're making a list, you know, it's Perry, Matthews, Fiedler, Fitzpatrick. Then you got Hoffman, Garrett, whoever you want to throw in there from Yale, Roberts, and then Chad. You know, that's the greatest year of any quarterback in Ivy League history.
Right.
And I used to say arguably, you know, Saturday night I was saying arguably, but Johnny Cochran couldn't beat me on an argument. You can't, when you break the all-time Ivy League record for pass completion percentage, for yardage, for total yardage, when you're one percentage point and literally not having a replay cost him the pass efficiency record, when you're one touchdown away, when not having a replay cost him tying the record for
touchdown
passes in a year. When you're the NCAA leader in three stats, I believe, in a given year. And when you broke every statistical record, and then, well, is he clutch? Is he not clutch? Well, Cornell, there's 40 seconds left. He gets us in field goal range. You know, obviously we didn't make the field goal. Penn game, there's a minute and 10 seconds left. We score a touchdown with 7 seconds to go in an unbelievable drive. And when I say Chad, I'm talking about the whole offense. But at the end of the day, if he's going to take the blame for the Lehigh game, he's got to get credit for these other things. You know, you go down to Dartmouth, and every time they took the lead, he answered, including with, you know, little time on the clock, a few minutes to go in the game, with an unbelievable drive and throw to Jesper and run by Jesper. And, you know, you look at those games, say, well, he's not – well, that's three times in the last four games where you can't say he didn't do everything under his power to will this team, put him on his back and win. And, you know, I don't think there's any statistical measure. He's got two rings, one as a starting quarterback, you know, that he earned here. And, you know, certainly in Ivy League history for a single season, you can argue careers. And I agree with anybody who wants to say that, you know, his coach, Coach Barry's career was probably arguably better than Chad's. But for a single season, I don't know how anybody could make an argument that Chad didn't have the greatest single season in Ivy League, not only Princeton history, but Ivy League
history. Yeah, I would agree with that. And you know, the success, you know, you said it, the success all goes together. But, you know, the connection that he formed with his two receivers, and it's funny because if there's no Jesper Horsted, we're talking about Steve Carlson's season as an all-time great receiving year here. And it was an all-time great receiving year here. It just wasn't the best one of this year because of what Horsted did. But those two together, the connection that they had with Knopf was from day one. Carlson, three touchdowns against the San Diego team that's going back to the NCAA tournament this year. You know, it's from there on out, those three just were untouchable almost. Horsted, you know, we talked a lot about Horsted all season, and first team all Ivy, unanimous selection, broke the Princeton single season receptions and touchdown receptions, close on yardage. You know, people saw this coming from last year. They could see over the final 5 weeks he was special. Steve Carlson came into this year with two catches, and nobody saw this coming. I mean, I know you talked about him before the year. I don't think you saw 11 touchdowns and 70 plus reception. 12, exactly. Yes, 12. Why? What was different with Carlson?
He had a great spring. He really, and I think a lot of it's confidence. And, you know, James Perry, I walk in, we hire him. We're talking through some recruiting things. We're talking about the Ivy League. He's obviously one of the all-time great players. And certainly had a distinguished coaching career. And James says to me, this is a junior-senior league. And it really is. You know, there's exceptions. And we saw it this year with Yale's running back and C.J. Wall and some others. But for the most part, most players in this league, probably 70, 80% of the starters, are juniors and seniors. And with Steve, he was a dominant high school player. But his freshman year, I mean, he's got academics that are the most challenging, and he's, you know, doing okay, but not acing. Football, our offense, everything else, he wasn't processing the information fast enough and was struggling some in there. And then he had a good off season. But he's also behind, you know, some great players.
Right.
And, you know, you look at his – Isaiah Barnes was an all-league player. You know, we had some tremendous receivers. You know, obviously – you know, it's hard sometimes to win those positions. And as a young guy, not everybody just takes it upon themselves to just earn it and go out there and be that much more dominant than some of the veteran players they got to beat out. And his spring was outstanding. But there were still some flaws in his game that when we had our spring exit meeting that we discussed. And he improved those areas. And you know, I mean, I really thought he was going to have a great year. You know, literally, if we have replay, and I'll keep saying that, but it's the second best receiver in the league this year.
Right.
You know, literally, he, you know, I think there's a great argument to me. That's, you know, you know, we may have had the two best. We certainly had the best receiver in the league and may have had the second best.
I don't want to gloss over Horsted. So, you know, it's one thing to go from, you know, the second or third option, which Horsted was last year, to the best receiver in the Ivy League. And I can say that comfortably, and I know you believe it too. But he made some plays this year that really defied belief. The catch at the one-handed catch at Harvard that made SportsCenter. The final touchdown of the season, I think there were four guys with their eyes on Horsted right around him. And somehow, now part of it goes to Chad to kind of firing it in there, but how he made that catch, never broke stride, and scores, he was somebody I can't remember being tackled by the first guy he got. It just seems like he has the collection of everything that you need to be a great Saturday wide receiver and, quite frankly, a pretty darn good Sunday wide receiver.
Yeah, he'll have a great decision to make because he's certainly a pretty good baseball player, obviously, as well. And I say that facetiously. I mean, he's an all-Ivy League baseball player and is certainly very talented there. And, you know, but, yeah, NFL scouts, after they got done watching, we had every team in the league but one come in. And many came in three or four times. They get done watching and studying Chad and Mitch, and they'd ask about number four. And you guys haven't. Well, he's only a junior, and they'd start talking about him as legitimate. And then they'd go back and who's 84, and he's a junior as well. And obviously, there's a couple guys we're not allowed to mention that I'm sure we'll have about 100 visits from NFL scouts next year because of the four guys we'll have, at least four guys we'll have that they're going to be looking at. But, you go back to that Dartmouth throw, and I had people emailing me, you scored too fast. And that play was a designed run. Because of what their defense did, it turns into a throw. Chad delivers it brilliantly. It's between two defenders. Jesper breaks a tackle and runs 30 yards.
Not much you can do.
There's, and we're down 4 points. So you're down 3 points and maybe you're running the ball and doing because you kick a field goal and you still have the, possibility of overtime. But when you're down 4 points, you got to score. You can't say, Jesper, take a knee on the one and let's get it in four downs and give them a minute left. You can't do that because the Dartmouth defense was leading the league prior to that game. So, it's just when you got players of this ability and, I don't know how many teams have had an NFL quarterback, NFL receiver, making those connections. Obviously, Watson may get there and obviously Torgerson has. That's one of the, few occasions with that.
You alluded to it in this last answer, and I was going to get to it later, but let's go to it right now. Mitch Swigert, you coached NFL offensive lineman. What did scouts say about him, and how does he project at the next level?
Yeah, this is what I love, because I exit meeting with every player. And Mitch last year, who was battling an illness and weighed throughout the year 260 pounds, was unanimous first team All-Ivy, and asked me, when you list guys for the NFL, what do I need to do? I want to be in the NFL. Can you list me? And I'm like, we have a reputation. I can't list a 260-pound offensive lineman. There's, they're going to laugh at us. And he goes, what do I need to be? I said, you get to 285, I'll list you. And I kind of, he's got to get 25 pounds. He works so hard and so diligent and through some, help from some doctors and everything else, found some, ways to control his illness and winds up playing this year 290 pounds. And you heard at the banquet, he's talking about, he got hit in the back of his ankle in the Yale game on the long touchdown to Tiger Besh that I don't know how he came back and played. In literally the last game and a half against the Ivy League and one of the NCAA leaders in sacks from Yale and against, a guy that Dartmouth talks about being an NFL prospect, he shut both those guys out on literally one leg. And it's just to tell you, and he said, the reason I did it, I had to protect Chad. that's the mentality of an offensive lineman and a great offensive lineman. And, I really feel that he's got a chance not only to make it but have a long career because of who he is and his talent. And, he's as good an offensive lineman You know, you go back to Dennis Norman and Ross and Hameen Abdullah. You go back to Chris Tice. You know, we've had some great ones here. And, you know, I think that, you know, there's, again, he's as good as anybody we've had. And he just one of those guys that he's not going to get a lot. He doesn't say anything. So he's not going to get a lot of credit. But when you go through a whole year and not give up a sack and you lead an offensive line to give up 8 and more than 400 pass attempts and is top whatever in the nation in that, and maybe I think we were tops in the nation in sacks per pass attempts, and, you know, you got a chance to play.
There are a lot of positions on this team that you know, or you have a pretty good sense of what it'll look like next year. I mean, you don't have a ton of seniors graduating, and they're a little spread out, and you could have some people returning, obviously. Offensive line will be the position that will probably be the most interesting to watch, I think, this spring. You know, you mentioned Swigert already, but then Eric Ramirez is 2-time All-Ivy League. You know, Richard Bush did a terrific job coming in at that center position, you know, and playing well. That's 3 spots. You also played a bunch of guys, and so would you say that you, while interested to see who wins those positions and how much depth you have, feel good right now moving forward?
Oh, I can't wait. I mean, this is an offensive line coach. I mean, believe me, I wish Mitch had another year. And I wish Eric had another year. And Bush, I mean, golly, did he have a great year. You know, those 3 guys, Mitch was definitely the best guy at his position, maybe in the country. Eric was probably the best guy at his position in the league. And Bush certainly played at that level as well. But, you know, as a coach, it's sometimes energizing that, you know, these young guys are now going to get their opportunity. And whether it's center and Alex Dieters and Aniko Ivanisevic, Andre Guest has just been working his tail off behind Eric that way. Brent Holder came on at left tackle really well and got some time, obviously, this year and did very well with it. Ryan Huth is just, he's a guy who spent the last 4 years as a high-level baseball player, and his first time he's going to get to lift in the offseason to the level he needs to. He's got tremendous feet. Stefan Ivanisevic, we got to get him, you know, right technically, but he's got a chance. Jack Corso is maybe the most athletic and talented guy we have as an offensive lineman. You know, Georgia T and Riley Radosevic have both been absolute rocks. You know, David Hoffman's another one that, you know, he and David Garfunkel, we got to figure out because they're both big, strong, athletic guys. And offensive line is made between December and March. You know, that spring ball, the work they do between December and March, and they are the weight room junkies. They're, you know, the guys that are in the weight room. And, you know, we've done such a great job developing offensive linemen. And we've played some freshmen. So these guys know there'll be some freshmen right on their heels. You know, Riley played as a freshman, made all Ivy. Mitch played as a freshman, and I probably should have nominated him because that's how well he played as a freshman.
The run game. Charlie Volker, 2nd team all Ivy League. He's 2nd in the Ivy League in touchdowns. He had those games where, you know, 4 at Brown, 3 at Harvard, 3 at Dartmouth. And he really kind of excelled in the 2016 John Lovett role, which was the ball got inside the 5. He was going to find the end zone. No one was going to stop him. But in totality, the run game didn't seem to have the same spark the second half of the season to the first. And I'm sure there's reasons. And part of it was you passed the ball so well. So it was, you know, it would have been silly to take the ball out of Chad's hands as much. But what does the running game, whether it's the 3 big backs, you know, Volker, Ryan Quigley, Colin Eady, or the line or whatever, but what needs to happen for that run game to be more of a threat next year?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it is, you know, we went into game plans, especially like a team like Dartmouth. They give up nothing rushing yardage per game. I mean, they're one of the best in the country. And, you know, we thought the best avenue to attack them might be a different way because nobody's running the ball on them throughout the year. So a little bit was that, a little bit, when you got a quarterback of Chad's talents, he throws the ball best. You don't put him in situations where he's going to have to run the ball quite as much. So you play a little bit in the run game 10 on 11. I think with the quarterbacks that we have coming back, we'll be able to play a little more 11 on 11. you know, like we did in, 2 years ago, and what we did with Quinn Epperly, right. And Connor Michelson was very good at those things as well. That'll open up some of the bigger plays. We were incredibly efficient in the run game. We're probably almost exactly the same within percentage points of the year before efficiency wise, but we got to find our explosive plays all occurred in the pass game. Mm-hmm. And, we're going to look at that and look at some things that we can be better at. Cause I feel we have the runners to do it, and we got to do a better job, you know, with the line up front and some things we can do to open up more gains and more bigger holes that will give them more space. But, our offense, I look at a lot of the analytic things. I kind of love that stuff. And, I asked for a report to be done the other day and just got it this morning. We averaged 3.4 yards per series, points per series, mm-hmm. this year. 3.4 points per series. In 2013, we set the all-time Ivy League record for points in a year, yards in a year. We averaged 2.9. Mm-hmm. We got to get the ball back more.
Right.
We have to find ways. And at the end of the day, those last four games, when you're averaging 9 series in a game, we were short more than 20 series any year the past 5 years. If you times 20 times 3.4, I mean, you're literally adding 70 points to the offense. 7 points a game, this is the greatest offense of all time. The offense can only control what they control. So we got to be better on special teams, got to be better on defense. And third down, we gave up 48% on third down. And that's not a number that we can be proud of. And not a number I'm proud of as the head coach. We got to do better than that. And because all the numbers were what they were, but offensively, we were much better than those numbers, even what they showed.
This year, I think people will look back and they'll look at the numbers, the individual and group numbers on offense, and then you'll talk about, you'll wonder what could have been, frankly, with injuries on the defense, with a couple of calls, and maybe replay changes that in the future, who knows. But, the one thing that you talked about with this team during the year and then, at the banquet afterwards was the resilience that they showed. I mean, the losses that this team took, you have one or two of them a season, and, it just sticks in you. And they had 5 of them. And the 4 at the end of the year and the first 2 of those, really took you what you thought was an Ivy League championship-type team and kind of knocked you out of the race, and then the chance against Yale. And yet this team, they never came out, a shell of themselves. You never heard them with the woe is me. What was it about them? Or maybe it just was that kind of what you leave thinking about this team is this is how you deal with adversity and this is how, you bounce back?
Yeah, at the end of the day, winning matters and the score matters and you work hard as a team to do that. But a long time from now, we celebrated last year and the next day you're 0-0 and it doesn't last, you wear the ring and everything else, but what you remember is the journey and you remember the memories and, coaching at the end of the day, we're educators. And if these young men, especially the seniors, go on to have more success, and they will, than the other 7 Ivy League schools, then we did our job. At the end of the day, if those young men go on to change the world and make a difference and are good people, then if they do better than those other 7 schools, then, all the other stuff doesn't matter quite as much. Now, at the end of the day, if you can do what you do in 2016 and you win the championship and you have those, that's even, obviously even better feeling because you work so hard to win, but I don't know. The celebration on Saturday is great and Sunday, but on Monday I'm having exit meetings and on the next week I'm recruiting. And, that's, what you love about the job is the journey in those type things. And it's the striving to win the championship. And we're going to strive like heck. I mean, we got a group of guys that I love. I love the guys that are leaving. I love the guys that are coming back. I love the staff and the support staff that's with us. And we're going to work and do everything possible so we can win a championship, you know, that way. But the fun part is, you know, these exit meetings and seeing these kids grow and seeing seniors. I was in their houses 4 years ago, and it seems like yesterday. And next time, you know, it's going to be graduation, and they're going to have jobs, and you're going to see them at alumni events and all those things. You know, the memories are going to be about the journey. It's not going to be about, you know, putting a piece of hardware on your finger that way. And those are things that you talk about a lot later. And I can't wait to get back to striving for that. And, you know, the ultimate thing is to get to 1964. You strive for perfection. And that's what I'm striving for. And, you know, as I told the team, we don't need to be in, we need to be 5% better. Everybody, me, starting with me. If we can be more than 5% better, great. But if everybody in our organization figures out a way to be 5% better in the weight room, in the meeting room, on the field, we're going to be pretty doggone good. And, you know, we're going to have to be, because everybody in this league is pretty doggone good. And, you know, it's certainly, if you paid for a ticket to one of our games, the way these games, they were certainly worth the price of admission, because they're some of the most competitive games I've ever been involved with.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Original 11. And for those of you who followed along all season, I've greatly appreciated your listening, and I've enjoyed doing this first edition, first year of the Original 11. Looking forward to doing more, as I mentioned in the intro, during the off season, and then certainly as we head into 2018. For right now, though, enjoy your holidays, and we'll catch you down the road on the Original 11.